I want candy. Daddy and Daddy are fighting.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 353, recorded on June 18th, 2014.
Welcome to the 353rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 186th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Paul S. Novak.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and includes gaming history.
So, I'm back from E3. Actually, Paul's not back from E3 because he's still in LA, but...
Paul lives in LA.
But he also attended E3 at least two of the days. And we explored enough. I mean, Paul didn't explore as much because E3 didn't interest him this year. But he did get to check some stuff out, and I got to check some stuff out, too.
It's not that it didn't interest me. It's just that I knew about most of the stuff beforehand.
Yeah, but a lot of us get the thrill of, actually getting more information, sometimes actually playing with it, playing with the games, that is.
But I suppose that's the big difference. I don't feel the need to play everything myself, especially when it takes, waiting on an hour-long line in order to do that.
Although we do have a story to tell, but we'll reserve that for a little bit later. Not too much later. Before game news, but what have you been playing, Paul?
Oh, dear God, I cannot stop playing Disney's Magical World for the 3DS. it's my new heroine.
Is that new?
It's maybe about a month old.
Okay. I'm going to make a guess about what it's about. And you can correct me if I'm wrong or not, because I have no idea what this game is. But I'm going to guess it's sort of like Disney meets Animal Crossing.
I'm going to say yes, even though I've never played Animal Crossing.
Well, Animal Crossing is that life simulator in which, you pick things, you have neighbors, you outfit your place and all that. So it's sort of like The Sims, but without anything interesting going on.
I'm going to say that no, then. This is not exactly like that. I mean,
I'm not saying exactly. I just mean... Is it an alternate identity thing in which you're in the game and you're conversing with other characters?
You mean, do you have an avatar?
Yeah,
like 75% of video games on the market?
But yes. I mean, is it like a life simulator? I'll leave it at that.
No, it's trying to tell the story, basically, of living in an offshoot of Disney World, helping the characters with their little problems, running a business.
Is this like Epic Mickey in which you're actually in Disney World, or is it just a world populated by Disney characters? Like, are you actually in the park?
No, because that would imply that there's, attractions. There aren't.
Oh, okay.
Well, but it's a similar enough idea that that I can imagine some executive at a meeting somewhere saying that the story is living in Disneyland with your friends.
Okay. So are these the major characters? Is like Minnie your neighbor or something?
You don't really have a neighborhood per se. I mean, there's a customizable space over a business that you own.
Okay.
But really, everybody just is kind of coming and going their own way. Hmm. So it's not like there's residential zones.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, Mickey and Minnie stop by at your cafe.
Oh, so you're running yet another cafe, huh?
God. Just like... I swear to God, I should open a restaurant with all these cafes that I open. With all these virgin, but that's exactly what makes this appealing to me. Like it's like a hardcore casual game.
Until you get more DLC for that food truck game.
There's already some out there. I'm completely uninterested because you've been Disney's there, done Magical that. World has no, because Disney's Magical World has simply supplanted it.
Okay, well imagine if you get a food truck in there too.
Yeah, but it's I'm not even going to dignify that with a response because it quite frankly highlights everything that I hate about your perception of what I do, and we're going to move on.
Anything?
because you, oh my God, I don't want to even go there.
because I'll spend the next half hour ranting about
it. So the name of the game is, again...
But you know nothing about video games.
Name of the game is, again, Disney...
Disney's Magical World.
Okay.
There's crafting systems, customization...
I'm just looking...
Fishing blind boxes. I mean, it's great.
Okay.
Just really a high level of polish. The Bandai did a fantastic job on it.
Oh, okay. So, me... I've been playing a lot of Lords of Waterdeep on my iPad. So because it's a nice time killer, you know, it's a board game. So I just, you know, start a board game, you know, and you know how it is with the iPad. You can just stop in the middle and come back to it, you know. And for some reason, you know, competing in that game against the computer AI is very fun. I'm planning on upping the difficulty to expert now because I'm starting to own the game. So I need to get some sort of challenge.
Speaking of your iPad, I am so glad you found that thing.
Yeah, we can discuss that story a little bit later as well. The other thing is that Half Brick has been giving away their games for free, at least yesterday. So I already owned Fruit Ninja, so I decided to pick up, since it was free, the Puss in Boots themed Fruit Ninja. Hmm. And it's kind of cute when you get combos. You hear Antonio Banderas saying something, you know.
Oh, that's lovely.
In the style of Puss.
Did they already release a full Puss in Boots only animated film?
Yes, they did. It was like two years ago. It ended with a Lady Gaga song, too. It ended with Americana.
Not up. Yeah, I'm not really up on all those slang things you kids are into these days.
It was a good spinoff. Arguably better than the Shrek the Third and all the other Shreks that came afterward.
You know what? I didn't like the original Shrek, so...
Did you like Shrek 2?
No.
Or you didn't like any of the Shreks?
I don't like Shrek as an intellectual property.
Yeah. You might like this one because it gets away from the whole ogre thing, and it's both cutesy and smart at the same time. So.
Yeah, it's not really at all my brand of humor.
Yeah, I think you might get a kick out of it. I've also been playing Dragon Age on my PC, simply because of E3, and it stoked my fires again for Dragon Age. But let's discuss it now. So E3, you didn't see many things, but you did see two things, and one of the
I saw everything that I wanted to see. You mean I didn't stand online and play everything that was there? Well, honestly, because, I mean, I wasn't particularly interested. The overall feeling that I got from E3 was that, A, the economy is still bad. B, publishers are still trying to, you know, not really veer off their existing magical formulas. And then, therefore, as a result, C, are really just offering more of the same in popular franchises.
Well, I mean, you know, but... We did do two tours. One was 2K, and basically, you know, I just had you there because I wanted to be with someone there, and also it gave you a chance to sit down in air-conditioned seats.
Oh my God, my back was killing me.
Yeah.
Still is.
Did any of the games at least intrigue you a little bit, like Civilization Beyond?
There were some interesting things about the Evolution game.
Evolve.
Evolve, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Evolve. Except that, you know, for my personal taste, I didn't need to see those interesting concepts, such as, you know, evolution, unbalanced multiplayer play.
Right, one versus four.
Right, I mean, it was just so mired in combat, or at least what we saw of it was, and that's just not my particular cup of tea, but it looked well done.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to see what the other monsters were.
I still have concerns about the... about the gameplay balance, because it's going to be really tricky when you have something that's really imbalanced, like one versus four. You know, you run the danger of either making the one too powerful or the four too powerful, and then it just becomes fun for nobody. Now, one thing that I insisted that you go see with me, and it was my second time, was to see The Sims 4. Because
oh my God, he dragged me. We had to wait online for like 45 minutes.
I wanted to shoot myself.
I wanted to shoot myself.
What? Wait, but you did enjoy the presentation.
Yeah, the presentation was great.
So I would like to hear your impressions of what's going on, because I know that you play The Sims. You know, you were a fan of The Sims Social
I was a fan of The Sims Social until I realized that in order to complete all the quests, my house was becoming filled with crap that I didn't want.
Hey, you know, that's mirroring real life now, isn't it?
Like, I in order to get the progressive statue, I needed to have, like, the polka-dotted bed. And, like, that's just not what I wanted to put in my house.
We have a guest star. Well, not a guest star, but a certain...
We have a guest star.
Well, not really that much of a guest star, but we're going to invite him in anyway.
We have an unannounced appearance. Woohoo!
What?
I'm going to make some chestnuts.
Who the hell is this?
Hey, guys.
Oh, hello, Jordan.
Hey,
sorry,
Jordan.
I'm sick. I just woke up.
Why? Don't die.
Who's this, Dave?
Try not to.
Yeah.
Don't die. That would disappoint me.
Yeah. So, anyways.
Says I'm not allowed to die.
Yeah, we were just discussing E3 and what we and the stuff that we were encountering. And we were just talking about The Sims 4. I know that Jennifer is really heavily into The Sims. I wonder if she's listening.
She's not. She's out in the other room.
Oh, okay. So anyway, so Paul, what was your takeaway from seeing The Sims 4, or at least the presentation of the game?
You know, it seemed really. It was interesting, but it didn't seem really novel. Like I said earlier, it seemed like staying the course, holding true to all the same design principles, and perhaps making it run a little faster, making the interfaces a little bit more user-friendly.
But
it was really nice to see in their sim editor mode that now you could just like drag widths.
Yeah.
You know, if you wanted to make somebody fatter or skinnier, you just, you know, click and drag. So, you know, all of those things were really neat tools.
But
you know, without seeing the new kinds of content available, I'm not sure that I would part with my
Well, my big takeaway was the fact that they're focusing on sim interaction more. You know, and what I hope is that they can be a little bit more autonomous without you having to tell them to go to the bathroom. You know?
Well, I mean, you've always been able to just set it to run by themselves. I mean,
yeah, but they were
from going back
stupid.
To Sims
that's
1.
That's the problem, though.
Well, yeah, so they worked on the AI. See, that's not, again, really giantly exciting. It's like, yeah, we worked on our AI, so now you don't have to tell them to go to the bathroom. It's like, yeah, great.
So
fantastic. Like, that's not an exciting feature. That's pretty much an expectation that they've set for themselves over the last 15 years.
Right. So, this year was really weird. I still don't know what my E3 game of show was. I don't know what game really impressed me. I sometimes go with Dragon Age Inquisition, you know, because I'm a huge Dragon Age fan. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I the demo really excited me, but, you know.
I think that if you weren't excited over No Man's Sky, the only reason was because you didn't attend the Sony conference.
I saw No Man's Sky last year. And that's the thing that people forget. They actually debuted that last year.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it,
and it was
it
intriguing.
Looks, it looks very impressive.
Yeah.
Particularly for an indie game, right? Indie games as a rule aren't very exciting. They look like, you know, 30-year-old arcade games. And this is a tiny studio that's like 10 people. The game was worked on by 4 guys, and they're turning out something that looks very phenomenal.
Last year, it was being worked on by 1 guy.
Last year, it was worked by 1 guy.
And the thing that impressed me at the time, and, you know, I'm still impressed, but, you know, it was, like I said, this is not new to me, but the entire thing is completely, utterly procedurally generated, which is why I investigated it in the first place.
Right. You know? Yeah. It's entirely procedurally generated. Right now, what they said at E3 is that it's only coming for PS4 and PC. And
when you say PS4 and PC, that tells you, yeah, other stuff too, but we can't really talk about it.
Exactly. If you go to the game's webpage, it says platform to be announced. It doesn't even say PC and PS4. So,
yeah. And the thing is, last year he said that every platform imaginable, which meant the Wii U, the Wii, the Xbox 360, the Xbox One, Android, and all that. And that's the big thing about procedurally generated games, by the way, is that, like the demo scene, you know, they can be extremely tiny. You know, old computers could run some procedurally generated games, you know.
Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 5 surprised me in a good way. You know, I'm not a fan of the series, but one, the graphics really look good, and two, you know, they're including all the best stuff from Peace Walker, you know, including the bass. I found it amusing that he actually had a sheep attached to a parachute that took it off and it went to your base. And when you went to your base, there the sheep was. I don't know what purpose that sheep is gonna be used for. The only thing I can think of is mutton. But I learned something very important in the demo too. Horses poop. The thing is,
yes, everybody pooped.
They had a horse poop right on in the demo with you facing the horse's butt as it happened. You know, I'm pretty sure that was not something that was. I think I'm pretty sure that was scripted just to get a laugh. But I liked Evolve. I like Left 4 Dead better.
I think the big problem with Evolve is that everybody's going to want to play as the monster. You're not going to have anybody wanting to play as the characters.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Jonah, you had other things on your mind when you were playing Evolve.
We'll get around to that later. I was really impressed by Civ Mian, but there wasn't enough gameplay. The one thing I really loved about it was instead of having a tech tree, you have a tech spider web in which Paul saw it as well, in which you have one tech and then it has a spider web of techs around it.
Yeah, but if anybody hasn't seen it yet in the news coverage, just imagine the tech tree from Final Fantasy X. I mean, it was the exact same thing.
The other thing is that certain techs have alignments in terms of ideologies. So depending on the techs that you take, you start to lean towards some ideologies. You know, they have three ideologies.
Right. So basically everything is broken down into one of three major
ideologies. Groupings. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But not – so narratively strip away the thought of it being an ideology.
Right.
And now it's just a bucket of what kind of bonuses it gives. Fair enough?
It also has an effect because depending on the ideology, your city changes to so it right now it only looks like a really, really good civilization mod. I'm pretty sure it's more than that. Dragon Age Inquisition really impressed me. At least the graphics did and the character interaction did. The world looks absolutely gorgeous. It was one of the best looking games I saw there. What else? Oh, right. And then there was this huge thing about Battlefield Hardline, is it? I think it's Hardline.
Battlefield Cops and Robbers.
Hardline, yes. And I was thoroughly unimpressed with it. A lot of people also have started saying what I said. It looks like a mod. And not a terribly inventive mod at that. And it's definitely not worth full price, which it is going to be.
The conventional wisdom among gamers is that not only does this look like a mod, that if they hadn't blocked modding, it would have been a mod.
Yeah. I mean, remember, Star Wars Battlefront originated as a Battlefront 1942 mod. Or is it a Battlefield 2? Whatever. It was that game originated as a mod. Call of Duty, the new Call of Duty Advanced Warfighter, which I find an amusing name. Isn't it Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter? Remember? That was, I guess, Call of Duty just took the name from Ghost Recon. It looked impressive. The graphics were great. But all I saw of it was the same gameplay demo that everybody else in the universe saw at the Microsoft briefing. So I did not play Destiny.
Did you play Destiny's Child?
No. I did play a little Fantasia again. It was there last year. It's the same thing. Although I was disappointed that you couldn't go into that thing in which you – it's sort of like a hidden puzzle, hidden object game, you know, between the things in which you're unlocking different instruments and all that. It's going to be very interesting to see what Harmonix does with it. And it's getting a lot of hype. I'm surprised about that. I mean, I know Disney's big, but Harmonix and Disney, you know – Is a strange combination. What was that?
Why? Disney has a fantastic tradition of great music. I mean, that goes back over 100 years.
I know, but you associate it with Rock Band, Harmonix, you know.
No, you associate it with Rock Band.
And Dance Central. That was a nice little announcement that Dance Central... What is that? Hello? Jordan, are you doing something?
Hello?
Anyways.
Paul appears to be cranking a telephone.
Hello.
Oh boy, Jordan.
Hello, Paul.
Hi, Jordan. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Okay, stop. So, one of the neat, nice announcements about at the Microsoft briefing was that the Next Dance Central is going to be a downloadable game, which is nice. It's not going to be the full $60 game. It's going to be like a $20 game, which is good, you know. And if there's one thing that people universally use Kinect for, it's Dance Central.
I could see that.
Although I really wish they would make the Xbox One version of Fruit Ninja. That's the game. That's the Kinect game I really enjoyed on the Xbox 360. So we're going to deal with the conferences, and Rock Paper Shotgun just tore through, you know, just poo-pooed both Microsoft and Sony's conferences. You know, like Microsoft went only with games. Although I didn't really see any missteps by Microsoft. I mean, you know, I mean, it showed what it wanted to show, and everybody was really impressed by Sunset Overdrive. And it was playable at E3. I didn't get to play it, but it looks really nice. And like I said 2 weeks ago to Jordan, it's basically a very colorful BioShock Infinite with Ratchet and Clank thrown in.
You know? Wait, you have to get more colorful than BioShock Infinite?
I mean cartoony colorful. I mean, you know, bright colors, cartoony. You know, that's
okay. The word cartoony is used by only people who have no...
Okay, let me put it this way. It looks like cel-shaded animation.
There you go.
Yeah, it's BioShock Infinite with a Team Fortress 2 layover.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But it's made by the guys who did the Ratchet & Clank, and even though Ratchet & Clank didn't sell well anymore, it's always had great, great multiplayer, so they know where they're coming from that studio. I did not play Destiny. I didn't, you know. So let's discuss the briefings. Microsoft, you know, they hit all their points, and I don't see what problems people had with it, you know. I mean, there was really nothing to complain about, at least just people who want to complain for the sake of complaining.
Oh, I can always find something to complain about.
Yes, we know that, Paul. Jordan, you watched.
Yeah, I watched the conference. I really couldn't see any particular problem with it. In fact, of the major conferences, right, between Microsoft, Sony,
quote unquote Nintendo,
quote unquote Nintendo,
and EA and Ubisoft.
EA and Ubisoft. I thought Microsoft had the strongest conference out of E3.
Yeah.
A lot of people were talking about Sony's conference and how, you know, they showed some good stuff, but Sony's problem was if you tried to watch their conference live, it was an absolute shitstorm. You couldn't watch the thing live. If you watch the conference, the recording of the conference, it comes across much stronger. But
see, the problem that a lot of people had with their Sony's conference is that they went very light on the first party software and went a lot on third party and indie games. And by the way, Microsoft also showed a ton of indie games, and you could tell in their briefing that they were actually selling themselves to indie developers. Say, hey, look what we're doing. You know, you join us.
Well, the other problem with the Sony conference was that they took out 10 or 20 minutes to talk about a Powers TV show that A, is not even cast yet, and B, isn't going to be coming out until December if they're lucky. They somehow believe that a show with no cast that is animated can come out in 6 months. That's not going to happen.
No.
Why they burn so much time talking about a show that nobody really is interested in, is not related to gaming, and is not even cast yet, is completely beyond me.
I mean, Microsoft,
you know what? They can get it out before that if they plan on dumping a huge metric fuck ton of money into it. Never right. Underestimate how much speed enough money can buy you.
Yeah, send it to the Korean animators.
Or if you drop the quality of the animation.
Oh, you get Clutch Cargo. Get some Clutch Cargo animation there.
The way animation works is you record the dialogue first. If they have no cast, they can't record the dialogue. If they can't record the dialogue, they can't do the animation. And, oh, by the way, yeah, it's not going to hurt us. It's still coming out in 6 months. Oof. I wouldn't want to be under that gun.
Could they be pulling the Scotty trick and lying?
It's possible. I mean, look, remember yeah. Remember the guys who were developing Killzone when they saw that target footage at back in 2006, they were like, right, we can't do that.
Right, exactly. Maybe. Well, you know, they just said December. They didn't say December of what year.
EA had an okay one, but I told this to Jordan. Did you see what I was talking about? Basically, what EA did was they got a bunch of lawn tables and tablecloths and lawn chairs and put it in the not in the auditorium, not the theater. And basically, they just sit wherever you want. You know, sort of like a Shriners convention.
I didn't see that it was like lawn tables and lawn chairs, but I saw like the round banquet tables.
Well, they weren't banquet tables. They were the same kind of plastic things that you find, you know.
Oh wow!
But the thing is,
that didn't come across on the cast.
They earned points with me because they were giving away soda, water, and they had donuts on the table.
To be honest, I fell asleep during the EA conference. I was trying to watch it, and I just could not stay awake.
Oh, God. Peter Moore, and you wouldn't be able to see this because they weren't recording, was doing stand-up act.
Wow.
He was entertaining everybody. Like he was saying, you know, we have media and donuts, and that's a dangerous combination, you know, that sort of stuff. So he was cracking everybody up. By the way, for those of you who watch it, at the end of the Hardline demo, you had one of the cops going, "Oh, look, donuts." What people didn't – may have been a standard cop donut joke, but it was actually aimed at the press who are eating these donuts, you know.
Right.
And it's a joke that only people who were there would get, you know. So it was very strange. I missed the Ubisoft thing. By the way, oh, yeah, Assassin's Creed. The problem I had with that was that I was not rooting for the assassins in that demo. You know, and I was gratified to learn that at least Ubisoft understands what the Reign of Terror was. You know,
right,
those are not good guys who are doing the Reign of Terror. You know, and one of the things is that one of the greatest people who was unfairly guillotined by these people was Lavoisier, and they actually have a DLC that's included with pre-orders, which goes around Lavoisier, called the Chemical Revolution DLC, and I'm pretty sure he's going to be one of the heroes, you know. And for those of you who don't know who Lavoisier is, look him up. He's the father of modern chemistry, and he did a lot of amazing things. So you have to look up Lavoisier. But he was lump sum, and by the way, a few years later, they apologized profusely to his widow. Not that you know, having your head cut off when you're 50. Was something that you can adequately apologize for. So Jordan, any of the games strike you?
From any of the conferences,
any
right?
Any of the conferences. Or not even from the conferences.
So a couple of things that I found interesting. One that I don't recall from the conferences, but one that I've seen listed on the various, you know, upcoming game sites, is a title called Mousecraft. Have you guys seen anything on Mousecraft?
I missed that. I saw other indie games there that were interesting, but not Mousecraft.
Mousecraft is coming out first week in July. It's available on PC now, and it is a combination – I swear I'm not making this up. It is a combination of Tetris and Lemmings.
Oh, okay.
And
I'm trying to figure out how that would work, actually.
That was my initial reaction, is how the hell does that work? But basically what it is you have little mice that are marching across the screen lemming style. And in order to get them across the screen, you have to place these Tetris-style blocks to create the landscape so the mice can march across the screen.
Cute.
And it looks like it could be a very good game coming out within a couple of weeks here, first week of July. I thought the trailer for Assassin's Creed Unity was nice. I was a little offended by it,
but you know.
I think they got a little distracted by all of the the comments about it not having a female playable character and so on and so forth.
You know, but they did have what's her face from the portable game. I forgot the name of it. You know, the one from New Orleans.
Yeah, Assassin's Creed Liberation, Aveline.
Yeah. So, Paul, the one game that you checked out, which I did not, because we had to go separate ways for a moment, was Disney Infinity 2.0.
Yeah, well, I mean, I checked out other games that you didn't, but yeah, it was It was nice to see it done, but it wasn't any, like, breaking news.
Right. Had you played the first
one? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it performed a little better. Okay. But mostly it was the big hoopla was over the Marvel characters, which we knew were coming.
Oh, right. I remember the game that you were interested in was doing was Splatoon.
Yes, Splatoon was a lot of fun.
So,
and it was basically like, what if Nintendo hosted a first-person shooter?
Well, we had a theory. Just watching it, and I don't know if you can confirm by the gameplay, but we had a little theory that Disney took the code from Epic Mickey and made it multiplayer.
Yeah, it looked. Oh. It was. I mean, that's basically what it was. It was running around splattering paint everywhere. And it wouldn't surprise me if somebody told me that Disney tried to recoup some money on Epic Mickey by selling the paint splattering code to a third-party developer. But yeah, it was neat.
One thing about Nintendo's thing, and almost just over a half of it was devoted to Smash Brothers, and a quarter of it was devoted to Splatoon. And the rest was just a bunch of terminals with other games. It's sort of like miscellaneous, including Bayonetta 2.
And their conference was mostly Mario Kart 8, if you watch the conference, right? It was Mario Kart 8 and Smash Brothers and very little else.
Mario Kart 8 was already released, though, wasn't it?
Mario Kart 8 was already released, yeah. Exactly.
So
the one thing out of their conference that I wanted to ask Paul about is, did you see the open world Zelda?
I did, and I played it, and it was okay. It was just slapping a Zelda IP on an off-matched mechanic. Meh. I mean, it reminded me of like Link's crossbow challenge.
Mm. Oh, okay. Because on the conference, all they really showed was Link standing in a field. They didn't really show much of how the game was going to work.
Yeah, Link stands in a field and a bunch of stuff comes running at him. Like, hundreds of things come running at him.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Well, no, you know, actually, the thing that I compared it to was Dynasty Warriors, and that's how it was described in the E3 guide. One of the days of the guide was basically Zelda meets Dynasty Warriors. Now, Jordan will appreciate
this. Right, so again, it's, you know, economy's still bad. We're going to license out our characters and hope to make a quick buck.
So, one of the really special surprises of this C3, and I wish Jordan had been there. So, because the thing is, I'm very cynical, blasé, you know, because I'm a New Yorker, you know, celebrities don't move the needle for me. But, I met face to face and chatted with for a little short time Richard Garriott, and because he was there promoting Shroud of the Avatar, which I, by the way, backed on Kickstarter. You know, it was the first time that I really felt like an idiot talking to someone because I was sort of going goo-goo gaga. One of the interesting things is that not many people there were greeting him. And I think, oh, God, I feel old because here's a legendary developer, but I think only people over 38 really get him. No offense, Paul, because I know you know who Richard Garriott is, Lord British. Hmm. But, you know, the thing is that, I know Jordan will appreciate this too, is the one thing I brought up to him was that the Overland music from Ultima is still burned in my brain, you know? And I said, the C64 SID chip. And I wish I had been there, Jordan.
I would have been too tempted to walk up to him and go, what is your name? What is your job?
Now, the thing is that the person who he's doing Shroud of the Avatar with, I hit it off with, and he hooked up. We exchanged LinkedIn. So I'm going to contact this guy, Finn. His name is Finn. Now, Paul, the bald guy there, you wanted to talk to, but he wasn't there when we returned, because you had worked, you had not worked with him, you know, face to face, but you'd worked on the same team with him before.
Yeah, that was Star Long, who we may remember from, I want to say, Ultima.
Okay.
Why is that feeling wrong? Yeah, but Star Long was pretty much the overseer of Disney's Virtual Worlds division for a while that I was in. And yeah, nice guy.
Did you get in contact with him again?
You know, I did not, okay. Unfortunately. But, you know, I really didn't see the need to take up his valuable time at the at the conference, you know, when there were so many other things for him to be doing. I just wanted to say hi to somebody that I knew, you know?
Okay. I was just about to say, I could always ask Finn to forward you to him, you know?
No. I'm well associated with Star.
Okay. So I also, by the way, Jordan brought up Baldur Duel briefly. That was my one geek out moment. I mean, I met Sid Meier and I didn't act, you know, I didn't stumble over myself like I did with Richard Garriott. So, yeah. The one thing I wanted to try, but the line was way too long, was the Oculus Rift. It was there as well. I mean, I saw what was going on in the monitor, or the show, but I wanted to experience it to see what it was like, by the way, they had other virtual reality headsets there too. So it's sort of like, you know, it was just amusing to see. There were two others there. I didn't try them either, although I could have, you know. So, we will also, Paul's really probably itching for me to tell the story with my iPad.
Oh my God. People, be happy you weren't there.
Yeah. So this is the one time that Paul ever saw me panic, right? Because I left my iPad at one of the stations at 2K, and I had no idea where it was, and I could not continue playing Evolve because I was too distracted. So eventually, long story short, they did find it. They went to the 2K desk, and then it went to the Lost and Found. And Paul, see, the thing is, they were trying to prove them. I had to prove my iPad was mine, right? And they asked me, what's the background? And I said, well, I never changed the background. I never pay attention to it. So Paul was smart enough to remember that the default background of the iOS is the raindrop background.
And I'm standing there, and I'm like, he's like, I don't know what it is.
I knew a way to prove it.
And I'm like, well, then it's either like a blue screen or rain droplets or something really innocuous. Come on, work with me here, Jonah.
Here's the thing.
Now, keep in mind that he had gone screaming around the convention center about how he'd lost it, and he was so mad at himself. And it was just like,
well, it's $900.
Take a breath.
You know.
Well, yeah. Nobody said that you weren't justified in being upset.
Well, the other thing is that I did know one way I could instantly prove it, though. I mean, the email. I could just say my email address is Jonah Falcon. No, I can't really say what it is online, but I could just give him my email address and have him press mail, and doesn't have to be logged on. You can just see the mail's address to my email address. And I have
the point of this story is that Jonah was not exactly thinking clearly at the time.
I was thinking clearly. I was just panicked.
In a panic situation, that does happen.
I was thinking clearly.
You were not thinking clearly. You think you were thinking clearly.
Anyway, so that's the tragedy that nearly happened at E3. And I was considering if I lost it, just to leave LA altogether, just pay the $80 and just take an early flight out. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Hey, why don't you take this, Jordan?
Sure. Before we go on to game news, what did you think about Grim Fandango coming back?
I have Grim Fandango.
I know, but they're doing an HD remake.
As a matter of fact,
isn't doing an HD remake these days?
I'm going to tell you something. I was discussing this with Tim Schafer on Twitter. And it's in my Twitter feed. And I'd been talking about him at length, and I wonder if I'd inspired him, or at least I was simpatico with what was going on. And the only reason why I would want a next-gen Grim Fandango is that you have to go through some weird hoops to play it right now on Windows 7. I have something called Residual VM, which works perfectly, which runs Grim Fandango perfectly. But it's still a little hoop that I have to go through to actually play it. And the only reason why I want to see it, and this is yet another one of those limited-time exclusives, you know, because I'm going to tell you something. As great as Grim Fandango is, it's not going to sell. It's not going to sell. No, it's not going to sell.
The way they introduced it in the Sony conference was absolutely hilarious, where they were doing letters from fans. And
oh, God, I hope
this obviously fake letter comes up on screen.
Watch, it's my letter.
claiming to be from a 10-year-old girl wondering about all of these great games from Tim Schafer from before she was born and so on and so forth. And they zoom out and they go, wait a second, look at the thumb holding up the letter. That doesn't appear to be a 10-year-old girl's thumb. And then they pan to the right and it's Tim Schafer. Very, very funny way to intro the game.
Well, you want to impress me, re-release Full Throttle. or even better, have the release the sequel. Because that was a thing for a very long – that's famous vaporware, Full Throttle too.
Even better, release the sequel to Grim Fandango.
You know, the thing is that I have a I discussed this with Tim Schafer, and I'm willing to bet you they're already working on the sequel.
Well, that's why probably why we do the art update on the original.
Right, exactly, because you can't do a sequel to a game that
nobody remembers.
Nobody remembers A, and B, people who are playing games now weren't even born when Grim Fandango came out. So, yeah, give them a shot.
Well, actually, before we go into gaming news, the last thing I want to bring up is Project Spark.
And yes, that was very impressive. That was probably the best part of the Microsoft conference.
And the thing is, I actually downloaded the beta on my Xbox One. So that, you know, I'll try it. Now, I actually toyed around with the Project Spark beta last year and at E3, and it was pretty fun. So I want to see what happens when I have full run and I don't have any time limit and all that. But the biggest surprise for the Project Spark demo was a certain furry squirrel coming out and slicing it the logo in two with his chainsaw, and it is indeed Conker. So it's a very interesting way to bring Conker back, and that is give everybody the Conker assets and say, you know what, you want to make a Conker game? Go ahead and make it. And I'm pretty sure that will spark a lot of I want to see what people do with Conker. Hello?
Okay.
Sorry, I was sneezing. That was very impressive seeing that come in. And, you know, I don't know how much people are going to construct with it. A lot of, I personally don't have the patience for construction kits anymore.
No, but you know what?
But there will be a lot of people who do a lot of cool stuff with that game. Kind of like with Little Big Planet. There's all of these different things that are out there. I can't sit in the constructor for more than 5 or 10 right. minutes. But there is some very cool stuff out there, and I think that'll repeat with Project Spark.
One of the things I noticed when I was toying around with the demo was there were three switches. One said third-person action. The other one said top-down shooter, and the other one had another genre. So they're making it even easier to do other genres with it. You know, so if you want to do a top-down shooter, boom.
So you have a base template.
Right. Now, the other thing, by the way, content sharing, that reminds me, going back to Sims 4, the other thing that impressed me about Sims 4 is that they're utilizing the Spore method of distributing user-generated content. If you ever played Spore, you know that when you go in, you can just go to friends or whatever, and it'll list all the stuff that they've created. And that's what they're going to be doing in The Sims 4. So you don't have to go outside the game, go to that clunky store, you know, and pick stuff. No, now you can do it in-game, you know, for free, get user-generated content. And I think that was a brilliant move, you know, because one of the things about Spore is it may have been mediocre, but the content generation was excellent. And the thing is, there wasn't a mod tool for The Sims 3, but people still made content for it. You know, it was very obscure. They're making sure that people can make content for The Sims 4. I think they're really going hard on that. Let me ask you a question, Paul. How much does that matter to you?
That does matter a lot to me. You know, like I had said about it before, you know, continuing along the design tenets that have been a part of the franchise from the beginning, you know, user-generated content has always been available. And even if not throwing development dollars behind it, Maxis and EA as companies have always been very encouraging to getting these communities together, allowing them to modify their games in whatever way works best for them. So, that is really interesting, and it will probably further that more for new users because, you know, especially for someone who's, you know, more casually into these things like I am, you know, I don't want to spend 9 hours finding the exact perfect outfit.
Right.
And then trying to read through some tutorial about how to get it into my game.
Yeah.
You know, it's like make it a 5-minute experience to help me get somebody else's content into my game, because that's what's going to keep me coming back to it and keep me purchasing additional.
Well, they really stress the search tools, you know, so you can refine your searches to get exactly what you wanted, right?
Right. Like if I want a rainbow unicorn t-shirt, you know, I should be able to find that and get it into my game pretty quickly. And now it might not be you know, monetarily feasible for Maxis and EA to, to make unicorn t-shirts as one of their top level goals. But hey, I want it. I want it in my game. I'm going to go look for it and make it easy for me to do that.
But you know, I think EA realized that when you have a ton of free user content, that's really good. People are more likely to pay for the official content as well.
Oh, absolutely. And what makes it even more challenging, what makes it even more beneficial for them is that they don't have to spend all of their time and money reskinning the same assets. What they could do is then spend their time and money selling new meshes as opposed to new skins.
Right.
So make the new shape of an object and let people customize that shape to their heart's content, which is what they've been doing in the past.
Right. So we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, Jordan.
I'll try to get through this without coughing or sneezing on anybody.
We'll forgive you.
Hirschberg, console transition pains, not a bad problem to have. This comes to us from Games Industry Biz. At last week's E3... At last week's E3, Activision took the AAA publishing mantra of fewer, bigger, better to a new level.
Wait, wait, did you just channel Don LaFontaine there?
I did.
Yes. Are you going to say it now in a world?
I can do that when I'm sick. I can also do Shelf.
In a world Chef, where EA.
Hello, children. To a new level, devoting the entire booth to just three games, Destiny, Call of Duty Advanced Warfare, and Skylanders Trap Team. CEO Eric Hirschberg acknowledged the company had a, quote, non-casually held strategy to do a few things and do them exceptionally well. At the same time, he saw the publisher's lineup as broadening over previous years in some key ways. Quote, it's funny that you're perceiving it as compressed because I feel like a few years ago we got the one-legged stool question on Call of Duty, Hirschberg said. Then Skylanders came and now we've got Destiny. I feel like we've been expanding the footprint, at least of tentpole franchises. We don't strive to compete in every category or genre. We strive to do things we think we can do better than anyone else and bring something to really special to market. In all three cases, Destiny, Call of Duty, Skylanders, I feel we have a pretty solid reason to believe we can do that. We don't strive to compete in... that's a repeat.
Keep going.
Whenever there's a console transition, there's been a disruption to demand for software... Whoa, my screen just jumped. Stop making things jump. Whenever there's a console transition, there's been a disruption to demand for software because what generally happens is that people buy a new hardware, and in this case, they bought it faster than anyone anticipated. Quote, if we were sitting here and you're asking a question about everyone buying a lot of Xbox 360 and PS3 games, but nobody's buying the new machines, I think that would be a worse equation for the industry. In the last console transition, some of the legacy hardware remained incredibly potent for years into the cycle. PS2 in particular, people kept buying games for that a few years into the console transition. We see the uptake in adoption of new hardware happening faster and demand for last-gen software declining faster. That creates short-term problems, but if you have to have a set of problems, I'd pick that one because it's the one that sets us up best for the future. If we were sitting here and you were asking a question about... Oh, that's also a repeat.
Sorry. That's all right. Probably the quote from this thing. So, go ahead, Jordan.
So, yeah, he has a point, and I think part of the problem, part of the reason that we're seeing the fast uptake of hardware and software is simply that this generation was delayed, right? The what we're seeing now is the current generation ideally should have happened around 2010, but because of all of the problems with the financial industry and so on and so forth and the Great Recession in the United States, it simply didn't happen until 2013. And as we saw in the NPD report, the interest in the previous generation of hardware and software was declining year over year over year over year. So by the time the new machines came out, everyone was ready for it. The previous generation, the 360 and PS3, actually launched a little prematurely. You know, that people were still into the PS2. People were still into the Xbox.
The 360 and was sort of forced by on Microsoft because of expiring contracts.
Exactly. The 360 was a forced premature launch. They didn't really have any other choice. That's the big difference between the launch of Gen 7 and the launch of Gen 6.
Paul?
It's always better to have growing pains rather than shrinking pains. So, so the marketplace has grown. People have multiple hardware SKUs. It's always better to have that kind of problem than the kind of problem where everyone's, like Jordan was saying, everyone's just sitting around getting really kind of tired of their old stuff and not having anything new to buy.
Okay, so we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead.
But before move on, I do want to question one thing, and that's the emphasis on Skylanders.
You know, Skylanders is huge, though. I mean,
Skylanders is huge, but it's rapidly becoming an oversaturated market because you have Disney Infinity, and you have the new Nintendo one coming as well with the built-in integration with the Wii U pad.
Normally, so I'd agree with you, Jordan, but
yeah.
The thing about this is that it's less video game and more toy.
It is more toy.
And
which
toy saturates a lot slower.
Toy saturates a lot slower, but also the toy audience is more fickle. And I think what's going to happen is once the Disney Infinity Marvel comes out, and if they announce Disney Infinity Star Wars, Skylanders is going to be seen in the rearview mirror.
No,
real
but you
quick.
See, the thing about Skylanders, though, is that Trap, by the way, Trap Team, basically, they're going in sort of like a Tamagotchi Pokemon way in which you actually, and this is pretty neat, you capture villains. And then they get sucked into the trap, right? And the thing about that is that you could actually hear it going from the thing to the trap. You know, it's a physical transition. And basically, you reform them, and they're in the trap, and you can hear them in the trap and all that stuff, right? And then when they're fully reformed, they come back out and fight for you. So
what you're describing basically is Pokemon.
It's Pokemon,
if Nintendo
but more
does
Tamagotchi-ish.
That, if Nintendo does that with a Pokemon game, it's game over.
Well, the thing is that, you know, Nintendo, all they're doing with Pokemon is doing the safe thing. They have the remake of Ruby and Emerald right now, and that's it.
Right. Yeah.
So Nintendo, you know, they're relying heavily on the old standbys. Smash Brothers. You know, yeah. And the thing is that I still don't understand the appeal of that. Yes, I know it's a lot of Nintendo characters fighting each other, but to me it's just a button mash for 8-year-olds. You know, I don't understand the adults who are into that game.
That's pretty much my opinion as well. But Nintendo is really kind of running a very thin line with the new toy thing, and it has the potential to be huge for Nintendo. And if they can monetize it. And can compete with Disney Infinity, it could potentially be a very big deal.
But when's the last time Nintendo was heavily into the toy market?
Well, anything to do with Pokemon.
Well, they're constantly
the cards.
Is that what you're talking about?
I'm talking about toys. I don't mean plushies. Okay, I know there's plenty of Pokemon plushies. Everybody has plushies. I'm talking about toys that you actually play with. You know.
Isn't that by definition most toys?
Well, no, I mean more in the line of, say, action figures rather than plushies, you know, stuff that you interact with and stuff.
You make it sound as if there hasn't been a constant stream of Zelda, Metroid, and Mario merchandise for the last 30 years.
Physical, I guess. I'm talking about what Activision and Disney are doing right now. I'm in that general area.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, I'm thinking about Robbie the Robot now. I mean, that's the last thing I remember.
I don't know that you could call any of these figures action figures because they really are just fixed poses.
But, yeah, but they still play with them. The thing that shocks me is that adults are going nuts over these rare silver ones and the rare, It's just like the Dark Age of comics all over again, in which
it's not exactly like the Dark Age of comics. There is a certain amount of speculation, but my fear is that it's going to be this generation's version of the Guitar Hero Rock Band stuff, where retailers just got fed up stocking it all.
But the difference here is that the packs, even the 3-packs, are much smaller and a lot more.
They are much smaller. So, but I mean, if you have 100 figures, it's going to take up.
Well, that's for the consumer. Yeah. I mean, people collect Hummels, you know?
Right, yeah.
Anyways, let's move on to the next item, please. Go ahead, Paul. Destiny.
Scrolling. Destiny may possibly come to Windows PC, and this comes to us from Tom's Hardware. In a brief interview with Polygon, Eric Hirschberg.
Just talking about him before.
I almost said Heisenberg.
They're very uncertain there with him. With Heisenberg.
Yeah, you can know where he is or how fast he's traveling, but other than that, you're out of.
Oh, science.
Anyway, the CEO of Activision Publishing explains that it makes financial sense to expand a big budget product across a number of devices. Quote, it's great to see that the next gen hardware is off to such a strong start. Both with the Xbox One and PS4 are well ahead of where their predecessors were at this point. But if you just woke up today and looked at where people are gaming, the majority of these people are still on the legacy hardware, he pointed out. The interview went on to talk about a PC version of Destiny. Currently, no such animal is officially in development. However, Hirschberg has said that Destiny on the PC would be, quote, a good fit, and is something the company is talking about and examining very carefully. Quote, you know, developing on a PC is a different animal than developing for consoles, and so we just want to make sure that we're putting one foot in front of the other and getting it right, and it's and that it's one of the highest possible quality, he said. But obviously, I see the same things about the natural fit. He stressed again that the Destiny on PC is, quote, a heavy point of discussion. Currently, Destiny is slated to arrive on September 9th, 2004.
2004? Wow.
Yeah, 2014.
Oh, we missed it, Jordan.
Don't be a jerk off. So perhaps we'll see the PC version hit the store sometime in 2015 if Activision gets a green light.
Well, Jordan, didn't that seem like a soft confirmation to you?
It does seem like a soft confirmation, and all of the PC Master Race people, including my son, got very excited about that announcement.
The PC Master Race?
Yeah, well, you know, PC users tend to be snobbish.
Yeah. And Alan was like, how do you feel like beta testing Destiny for the PC Master Race? And I said, great. As long as the PC Master Race continues to remain 1 year behind, I'm okay with that.
Stop. The thing about it is that Jordan would be a PC gamer, except for the fact that he can't deal with a keyboard and mouse in his action games. He has to have a gamepad, which I totally understand, you know. Yeah.
It makes perfect sense, because if you look at the amount of time they've sunk into Destiny, right, they have to have sunk in more money than they're going to make back.
$500 million, last I heard.
Just the Xbox One and PlayStation 4. So, as we mentioned in the previous article, interest in the last generation is declining. So, in order to recoup that money, they're going to have to either expand the IP to more platforms.
Didn't they announce it for 360 PS3 already?
Yes, it is coming for the PS3 and 360, but what's going to happen is people who really, really, really want to play Destiny are going to upgrade their hardware and buy either the Xbox One version or the PS4 version. They're not going to play on old hardware.
Well, I don't know. A lot of people really kind of can't afford $400 on new hardware if they only want to play one game.
Yeah, and a lot of people have had the attitude, you know, when Call of Duty Ghosts came out and Battlefield 4, was that since your stats were going to transfer, they said, well, you know what, we're just going to play on our current gen and wait a little while for more games to come out before we go to the next gen, you know? And yeah, for a lot of people, that was a good thing, because they said, oh God, Ghosts and the new Battlefield both suck. We're glad we didn't buy it for the next gen, or we didn't buy a next gen console for them.
Well, and here's the thing, too, is that Destiny is coming out late enough in the year that all of these titles that have been pushed into 2015 are going to be much closer. And so I think people will rationalize it and go, you know what, we're getting Destiny now on the premise of all of these other cool games in 2015. Destiny, my prediction is that it's going to be the next-gen system seller.
Well, look, it has a pedigree, you know.
Yeah, Bungie, it has a complete pedigree. You know, and we saw the same thing with Titanfall, right? There's no way they're going to make back their Titanfall money just on the Xbox One. They had to do it on the 360 and PC as well.
Well, the PC less so. Sorry, Alan. But, you know, I don't know. I have to check out what the Titanfall sales on the 360 were. I would imagine they were pretty robust. I mean, you know, it puts me in a quandary, either to get the PC version or the Xbox One version. On the one hand, Xbox One version will have achievements, but the PC version will have keyboard and mouse, and I'm basically still someone who prefers doing his shooters on keyboard and mouse, because that's how I was brought up. you know, what amuses me, there's a lot of 20-somethings and early 30-somethings who are people in their early 30s, late 20s who have never played shooters on a keyboard and mouse, and they're all gamepad, and they can't fathom playing a shooter on a keyboard and mouse.
Right. No, I made that transition and never looked back. But the Destiny Alpha already came out for PS4. I missed the Alpha by the skin of my teeth. I'm already in the beta, which starts next month. So it looks fantastic. I've been watching the streams on the PS4. And the only problem that I've seen with it is that the people who are streaming aren't really, you know, playing the game. They're playing with the physics of the world, which there's nothing wrong with that. People did a lot of that in the Halo games as well.
I have no interest in playing a demo. I want the finished product. Thank you very much.
I love beta testing stuff.
Only because everybody else sucks, and you know, it's before people get specialized in the game, and suddenly people are like crack shots, and you're still, why are you that good too? You know,
they started everybody at level 4, so you didn't have to level up, and then they're going to wipe all the character stats.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Nintendo's top designer has quote-unquote uneasiness about virtual reality, and this comes to us from The Verge. Nintendo's top game designer Shigeru Miyamoto, and this is why I took this one, Paul, so you didn't have to stumble over his name.
I can't say Shigeru Miyamoto?
Okay.
Why not?
You know, you stumble over everybody else's name. I get, well,
yeah, that's because they're inconsequential.
Okay, well, Miyamoto, I get, yeah, he's kind of big. Finally tried the Oculus.
He's kind of a thing, you know?
He finally tried the Oculus Rift at the E3 gaming convention, and it sounds like he wasn't in love with it. When you think about...
Well, because they turned one of his masterpieces into crap, but that's a whole other story.
We'll get into that right after this. Quote, when you think about what virtual reality is, which is one person putting on some goggles and playing by themselves kind of over in a corner, and maybe they go into a separate room and they spend all their time alone playing in that virtual reality, that's in direct contrast to what we're trying to achieve with the Wii U, Miyamoto told Time. And so I have a little bit of uneasiness with whether or not that's the best way for people to play. Nintendo is interested in virtual reality technology, he says, and is, quote-unquote, always looking for new hardware and assessing what's possible. But the current option within the company is that technology is better suited for arcades rather than the living room, he says. Okay, Jordan, you can open up both barrels right now. Because for one thing, we know what Nintendo's experience with virtual reality has been.
Right, and my initial reaction is he would have been more impressed if it was.
You leave my power glove alone.
That's not what we were referring to.
Yeah, my reaction
power
was he would
off of her. Okay.
He would have been more impressed if Oculus Rift only existed in 256 shades of red.
Or if Oculus Rift said that they were didn't say that they were avoiding consoles. Remember, right now Oculus Rift, they always said we're doing PC because only PCs can handle it, right? Which I think is BS. But
oh, it's complete BS. I'm not even going to get into it.
Like I said, I would have liked to have experienced Oculus Rift at E3. I didn't.
Yeah.
But, you know.
As soon as they get it running in greater than 800 by 600, then I'll be impressed. I think Miyamoto's right in that that's not. He's right to a certain extent, and the idea of somebody putting on a helmet and going sitting over a corner doesn't match Nintendo's vision. The problem is that Nintendo's vision doesn't understand that that's not where the game is happening. Right? in a virtual environment, you could have 500 people playing together in the same space. It's just that,
wow,
you know,
that
yes,
has to be a really big space.
Physically, everyone is in a little corner of their room.
Oh, okay.
But virtually, they're not, right? There's a disconnect there.
And I agree with you, but that doesn't seem to be what Nintendo's mission has been about. Bringing people physically together to play games.
Right. Which explains why they ignore online play and do all of this other stuff. They're trying to do same room gaming, right? Mario Kart 8 is much more fun in a room with six people than it is individually playing online.
Oh, it's same with Mario Party. I mean, I can't imagine
Mario Party, obviously.
Super successful franchise, you know. Yeah, you could play it over the internet, I suppose, but who would want to?
Right. You want to play Mario Party. You want to play Mario Kart with a and I would even Super Smash Brothers with a room of slightly drunk people.
By the way, that reminds me. Speaking of all this, the one big thing that Paul did take away from E3 was that there were a lot of 3DSs out there, so he got a lot of spot passes his way.
Yeah, E3 was just about as good a place for that as like Disneyland.
Yeah, so he, you know, I was watching him get pieces for his for the portraits that he could have live portraits.
Speaking of, but that's not exactly, you know, hardware selling features.
So speaking of that, I don't know if you guys saw the announcement today that Amazon announced their phone today, and the key feature on their phone that's
they're using is that it doesn't make phone calls.
It's a differentiator, is that the phone has four infrared cameras on it that do head tracking, and the phone has a simulated 3D effect, much like what Nintendo did with the DS. Eye, right? It used the camera as a head tracker, and you could move the DSi and it would do a simulated 3D effect. People are jazzed about that with the Amazon phone. Do you think maybe we'll start seeing more of that from Nintendo again?
Well, it depends on how big. See, the thing is that Nintendo, and wisely, it considers the mobile space to be their chief competitor.
Right.
Because that's where, you know, the mobile space is starting to grow and grow. Actually, I think that's a later article. So anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Take it away, Jordan.
How the Xbox One's 10% GPU increase works without Kinect. This comes to us from VG247. Xbox One bundles are going Kinect-free, and Microsoft has stated that developers can benefit from a 10% GPU increase in their games as a result. Speaking with Eurogamer, Microsoft Studios creative director Ken Lobb began, quote, "Lots of people ask, so you're taking back the GPU reserve for Kinect. Well, does that mean I can't say Xbox record that? No, you can always say that."
You know, I hope you didn't say that too loud, Jordan, because I don't want my Xbox starting to record stuff.
It follows some confusion about Kinect being turned off completely in games that use the 10% GPU boost. Lob's confirmation that it won't be shut down entirely raises some fresh questions about how Xbox One will run the boosted game and the motion sensor in tandem. I'll comment at the end. He said that it can bounce between different on-off states, adding, so if someone says Xbox record that, it will work on 100% of the games. If you have a Kinect and you don't have a Kinect, it's not like you have more RAM. When the GPU boost is required, Kinect will pair back and come back into play once needed. If the game is entirely Kinect-free, a developer can suspend gesture and voice controls across the board if it chooses. Kinect will then reactivate once you leave said game. Lob said, you have more GPU, so go ahead and use it how you want. It's more GPU plus more bandwidth to the GPU, so they both matter. So for some games, it might be resolution, it might be frame rate, or it might be let's throw in some more enemies.
Go ahead, Jordan.
So he's forgetting that the Xbox One operating system still is in existence, right? So a lot of the basic commands are going to be controlled by the operating system. They have nothing to do with the game whatsoever. If you disable the voice controls completely, that's fine. Once you quit the game, you'll be out. You'll be back to the
gesture controlling would be more of a hog on resources.
The gesture control is very much more of a hog because it's doing skeletal mapping and skeletal tracking. So, exactly, yeah.
So, I mean, Paul probably can appreciate this, that, you know, it'll be a little bit smarter about it. And, you know, what it sounds like is that even as it is, it'll, like, go back into the background and wait to actually be needed before it comes out, even no matter what game's there, you know. Paul.
Yes.
Comment.
I'm sorry, that did not sound like a question.
No, I mean, Paul, comment.
Oh. Yeah, it really gets frustrating to me overall, this sudden backpedaling on the Kinect support. So this story just kind of feels like, hey, well, we're backpedaling on the Kinect support, but you can get 10% more GPU if it makes you feel any better.
Jordan.
Like, yeah, that's kind of great, except it's not going to help me with the game that I've just spent the last year and a half making.
Well, to be fair, not a lot of games have incorporated Kinect anyway, so they're not doing it in anyway. You know, I mean, for those people who are doing a Kinect game, that's fine. You know, I mean, a lot of people bought the Xbox One with Kinect because that was the only option. You know, I'd be interested to see what the sales are going to be like in the next 6 weeks.
So two things on this. First off, the developers that have unlocked this potential have already said that it closes the gap with the PlayStation 4 in terms of frame rate and resolution. It seems to be that this is what was holding back the Xbox One.
You know, again, with frame rate and resolution, you know, that's not what makes a game fun.
If this 10% in increase takes precedent, right? That's why this gap getting closed is such a huge deal. And if developers can retroactively patch their software on the Xbox One so that it comes back to 1080p, it comes back to 60 frames per second, that's going to increase sales more than having a cheaper Xbox One.
No, because by that logic, Halo 3 should have never sold anything with its paltry 560p resolution.
Well, at the time, there wasn't a lot else that was going, you know.
That's not true either. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. I believe this is you, Paul.
I want candy.
Candy Crush.
Daddy and Daddy are fighting. PS4, Xbox One seeing much higher digital download attach rates, and this comes to us from Games Industry Biz. The industry has seen the majority of the products that major publishers and platform holders expect to drive the market for the rest of the year. The good news, according to the CEA, is that the new consoles are resulting in renewed enthusiasm in the business. CEA said that the wholesale revenue is predicted to reach $5.2 billion in 2014, an increase of 85% over 2013. And CEA is predicting an additional 12% growth for 2015. Unsurprisingly, digital is really taking hold. The digital download attachment rates are considerably up on PS4 and Xbox One compared to their predecessors. CEA noted that the PS4 digital download attachment rate is 57% of physical discs compared to 42% for the PS3. And for Xbox One, it is up to 62% compared to 37% for the Xbox 360. That being said, brick and mortar is still in the driver's seat for now. CEA found that 36% of customers prefer to shop for video games at mass merchants, 32% prefer general or specifically electronic stores, and 31% prefer to shop for games online.
Go ahead, Paul.
So this goes back to what we've said on the show a number of times, is that while more and more people are comfortable receiving only digital copies of their games, that's not everybody. That's not people who've been playing games for the last 20 years. You know, there's still that hardcore group of people who are maybe a little uncertain about what the future of digital rights management holds, and really just want a physical copy of their games.
Go ahead, Jordan.
I think, too, that this is actually a fake stat because it's including people who are getting free games from Games with Gold and PlayStation Plus.
And is it also including people who download add-on content?
That's correct. Yeah.
Jordan, the thing is that the thing that you're forgetting is that they gave a dollar amount. So if it's free, that's not adding to the dollar amount.
That's true. That's true.
I mean, if they're talking about volume, then the free – and here's the thing. You make a good point about the free digital giveaways because that's – the thing is that people are starting to view – I mean, not people like who have been using Steam since 2004. I just mean more general public are starting to view digital content less and less as a scary beast, you know, and more as a friend. I mean – for one thing, you know, casual games have already inured them a little bit to that because most casual games don't come on disc. You know, they come on download. But now, you know, you're seeing a lot more people buying day one AAA titles on digital, especially on PC. But also, they've been doing that a lot on PSN, you know, day one AAA titles.
Well, right, but you know, we're not talking. If you look at the article, right, they're not talking about the dollar figures. They say the digital download attachment rate, right? So they're talking about the number of games that are being downloaded. They're not talking about the number of games that are being purchased. And that again goes to what you say with you know, how much of this is the season pass for Borderlands 2? How much of this is the season pass for Battlefield? You do have to buy that. But what I'm in addition to that, there's also all of the games that are free, and that counts towards the attachment rate, right? So Sony was very big on making a big deal about the PlayStation Vita and how so many people are downloading digital games for it. They neglected to mention that virtually all of that was free titles through PlayStation Plus.
Still, you know, I mean, you still have – I mean, even if subtract that, it's still an incredible attach rate, you know. Say
I would like to know what the actual attach rate is for purchased content versus free content. And I would also like to know how much of it is attach rates for digitally purchased games versus buying a game at retail and then buying the season pass digitally. That doesn't count in my mind because the game is what was purchased at retail.
Additionally, I'd like to see how much those numbers are skewed by like weekend 99 cent sales.
That's true too. Yeah.
You know, you get a fantastic game that you normally wouldn't have bought, but you get an email that, oh, you can get it now for 99 cents. And
but the thing is that,
you know, and it's a 40-year and it's a 30-year-old game.
From what I understand though, that $5.2 billion has nothing to do with PC. I think it's all I think they're saying it's all console.
And right, well,
the thing that really amazes me is that it was a leap of 85% over last year.
I agree with Jordan. I'm a little skeptical of the number.
It's still, you know, whether you're skeptical of the actual numbers or not, you don't need to be a scientist to know that digital is becoming more and more accepted and the norm now.
Yeah. Well, and that's actually not true either, because if you look again at the article, they say that the $5.2 billion is an 85% increase over 2013, but they're only predicting an additional 12% from 2014 to 2015.
Well, there's just so much to buy, Jordan.
So that would indicate a shrink.
But remember, you also said that 36% of the people still go to brick and mortar.
Right.
Prefer to.
I think this stat is bogus. I think that there needs to be a greater drill down in the numbers. And somebody's playing Weasley games with numbers. Here's what's going on.
I agree.
So I'm not going to do the mail. Go ahead, Paul.
You're not going to do the mail?
Well, I mean,
listen to this one.
Well,
too good for the mail for now.
No, it's just that it's one of your favorite people is doing it.
From Alpha Shard. I was expecting Max Donovan.
He has not written a letter in a very long time, just so you know.
Well, I'm disappointed. Not too much to add this week. Looking forward to what is revealed at E3. Excuse me, it says reviled. What is revealed at E3?
Sometimes what's reviled at E3 is more interesting.
I think so.
It's revelry.
Stop changing the text when I'm not looking.
I'm not
Like Civilization Beyond Earth and GOG's Galaxy content. As for the question of the week, I do like seeing the reports and interviews, so I do try to get as much of them as I can.
Now, I did mention, we did mention earlier in this podcast what our takeaway was from Civilization Beyond Earth, so I hope you enjoyed that, Alpha, and hopefully you saw some of the screenshots. It is a beautiful looking game, though.
Yeah, it looks lovely. It doesn't really seem particularly innovative, but that's just my
opinion. But it's Civilization. There's just so much you can do, you know?
Exactly. But that was my overall takeaway from E3 as a whole.
Right. So actually that leads straight into the question of the week, which is, what was your biggest takeaway from E3? How about you, Paul? I mean, Jordan?
My biggest takeaway from E3 was that the economy's still not in the greatest place. Nobody's really willing to take super risks. So what we're going to see for the upcoming holiday season and probably most of next year is going to be further entries in popular franchises and companies being unwilling to take risks on unproven gameplay mechanics and brands.
Go ahead. Jordan, what was your biggest takeaway?
My biggest takeaway is that Sony is apparently more interested in a cartoon show with no cast than the PlayStation Vita.
By the way, some people called that Sony's Wii Music moment.
Yeah, the worst part of it was Sony just continues to give excuses why they don't want to talk about the Vita. Last time it was, well, we had a lot of stuff to talk about, you know, like the Wonder Book, So, you know, we had to, you know, we couldn't talk about the Vita. And this year it's talking about a cartoon show nobody's going to care about and is nowhere near to production.
The Wonder Book was neat, but it wasn't for E3, you know?
Yeah. No. And the same thing with the Powers TV show. If the Powers TV show had been announced at Comic-Con, it would have been a big deal. But putting it in E3 makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah. My biggest takeaway from E3, fortunately, wasn't my iPad. So my biggest takeaway was that I still don't know what, you know, there was no standout game for me, really. I mean, really standout. I'm leaning towards Dragon Age Inquisition, but only because I don't have any other choices, you know? There was no surprise, you know? And even though the final product wasn't that great, there was no, like, brink moment for me. And, like, you know, I go in there, I don't know what to expect. Oh, my God. Wow.
See, I saw the trailer for Dragon Age Inquisition, and my initial reaction was, wow, this looks really generic. And then they showed the Enchantress, the black chick, Vivian. And I was like, wow, that looks really bad. What game is this? And it was Dragon Age Inquisition.
But that's the headdress that magisters do wear. I mean, you know, that's...
It wasn't her headdress that looked bad. It was the character model.
You know?
And the skin tone looked wrong.
Yeah, well, you know, it looked right in the other thing, so I guess maybe your color contrast is off.
No, it was fine watching it on my Surface Pro.
The game looked really, really good. I will say that one of the WoW games, which is a very small game, which I did get to check out, was Blood Bowl 2, which is being done by Focus Home.
I didn't know there was a new Blood Bowl game coming.
Yeah, well, it's PC only, unfortunately. But then again, it's a turn-based game. Now, I almost forgot to say is that I'm doing a giveaway, and I'm giving away E3 swag.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was the other thing. I didn't want people to keep giving me stuff at E3. It was just like, go away.
So what the E3 swag will include is a Sims 4 bag, a Sims T-shirt, Sims 4 T-shirt, and sunglasses, and some other stuff like a little plush cow from Farming Simulator 2015, and, you know, and a cap from that. And the thing is, you may laugh at Farming Simulator, but that thing is the Call of Duty in Germany. I mean, it is huge.
I'm just laughing at the idea of stuffed cows being given away at E3.
Oh, yeah, it was a little stuffed cow.
Were they stuffed with rice?
No, it's just, you know, it's, I don't know.
They needed to have stuffed goats for the goat simulator.
I think also a Dragon Age Inquisition T-shirt and some other stuff. Oh, and I'm also going to include all 3 days of the E3 report so you can see what other people were reading. And one of the neat things is that they give a recap of each day. You know, and each day they do two of it. So, like, the first day they talk about Microsoft and EA's conference. Then the next day they talk about Sony and Ubisoft's conference. And the next day they talked about Nintendo and another developer. And also, as a really good guide, if you forget what I wanted to talk about, you just look through it and say, oh, yeah, that happened and that happened and that happened. So, yeah, so you're going to get the swag. And the way to win it is just to say what your biggest takeaway from E3 was, or at least the game that excited you the most, you know, from afar. So that is the contest. If you want a nice swag bag.
The swag prize pack. And you didn't even have to stand in line 9 hours to get it.
Well.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Speaking of swag, the big giveaway from the last time I was at E3 was the Oswald the Rabbit ears from Disney's Epic Mickey 2. Dude, people stood in line for like 3 hours to get those things. I know. I was one of them.
My favorite was the bottle of steroids from the Duke Nukem Forever booth.
Oh,
I never saw that.
Last year, they were giving away this one person. They were giving away graphic cards, good ones.
Wow.
And it was, of course, it was all gone by the early of the second day, but it was like shocking. It was like, wow. I also did enjoy going to Alienware and checking out the neat computers that I could never afford.
This year, once again, the top swag prize goes to Disney. After standing in line for over 2 hours, you got a grab bag of one of their new Marvel Infinity figures.
Oh, which one?
Ooh. Yeah, just I did not stand in line for 3 hours to get one of those.
I mean, what figurine did you get?
I didn't.
What figurines did they have? Was it like an E3 exclusive deal or?
No, it was not an E3 exclusive deal, but it was first run of the Marvel heroes. So they had Thor, Captain America, whatever really they were showing, Spider-Man, whatever really they were showing off.
Gotcha.
Which is fantastic. I mean, I personally don't at the moment have an Infinity. So back when I went to D23 and got the exclusive Sorcerer Mickey, I sold it on eBay for 100-something bucks.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that's what these things are going for because of their limited availability. So yep. Once again, Disney wins the swag prize.
Right, but did you keep the Sims 4 swag that you got?
Oh, yeah, that's great. Okay. That's quality stuff.
I mean, you know, those bags are more handy than what's it called? I'm using one of the Sims 4 bags because I got two of them because I went twice. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the action that happened on the screen did change. You know,
of course, it was a dynamic presentation.
And you know, I was mildly offended by Chuck Norris being in the demo, as you were, but
I was going to, you know, keep my personal political opinions out of my E3 reporting. But since you brought it up, yeah, I was a little bothered by their choice.
But you know, they
picked, I don't know, Oprah,
or Obama though.
They really could have picked any celebrity, and probably would have been a little better off having picked.
Well, they did
any
bring
celebrity
in
that wasn't.
Bring in Kim Jong-un, who set the place on fire and peed himself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but you know, we're going to keep the issue out
subtle.
Of the podcast, but you know, Chuck Norris has personal stances that can, you know, like anybody else really, but he has personal stances that can piss some people off, myself included. Mm-hmm. So it really, to me, wasn't the greatest decision to use, you know, a Chuck Norris sim.
Well, you know what you could do, Paul, is just Enter the Dragon and watch him get his ass kicked by Bruce Lee.
No, I don't have that kind of time to spend. Really.
No, just that one
scene. I don't have.
That's the magic of DVDs.
You could probably watch it on YouTube.
I don't care enough. That's the difference. The people think hate is bad. Indifference is worse. Yeah.
Yes, the opposite of love is not hate; it's indifference. So
exactly.
Like I said. To win the swag bag from E3. Oh, and by the way, I hate to say this, but it's U.S. only because I'm not going to pay the exorbitant amount to do international again. So, sorry, you have to be in the U.S. and just post your opinion of you know, what your biggest takeaway from E3 was or the game you look most forward to. So, and that's basically it. So, yeah, swag bag. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, Bonds.
And Jordan's voice just collapsed when he knew that the podcast was over. It's like, yeah, I don't have to do my voice anymore. I can now become this, you know, I can let my voice be its natural.
The head with two things. I mean,
I can go back to sleep now.
You do that. Okay. Good night, guys.
Good night.